This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Good morning. I'm Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This is going to be completely different here this morning. You are here to see a stage show, and that's exactly what we're going to see. Actually, as you say, the stage competition. And so you're ready for the first one. Perfect. I'm just waiting for the city so I can announce them properly. I have the names, but not the locations, and they're looking for that. This morning, what we're going to be doing is introducing the people who are the contestants for this morning. And between time, we're going to be having a few guests who will be interviewed or chatted, who I chat with, so that way I get a little bit of content for the podcast. You kind of get to see how the sausage is made when you get to hear the podcast at a later time then, too, which is kind of a win-win for everybody. Thank you very much, Bob. Yeah, they didn't see you when you bend over like that. That's good. You suddenly become invisible, you know. Great. So with that, we have the first contestant who is already ready, so we're going to get that person up, and we're going to be having some very interesting guests who are going to be coming up intermittently, and that means occasionally throughout this presentation. So the first person up, please welcome Joe Pastrano from Cooper's Cove. All right, so we are back, and we're beginning as they strike the stage and set up for the next one. I have with me my first guest for this morning, Hannah Amar. Hello, Hannah.
Hello.
Just talk to both of these.
Talking both.
Yeah, one that they can hear and one that I can record with over here, so it sounds great.
Okay.
Good. That's right. So listen, thank you very much. You used to reside in Austin for a while. You were going to school here, is that right?
That's right.
Interior design?
Yes.
Is that what it was?
Yes.
And then you moved to Orlando, or where are you in Florida?
From Austin, we moved to Las Vegas. Michael was performing at Caesar's Magical Empire.
Right.
He was the first magician there. And from there, we went to Los Angeles, where we were several years, and then to Orlando. So
behind every successful man, there's a successful woman who is there helping him along the way. So I think you should get some sort of applause, I think, for everything that you've been doing as well.
Because I should.
I don't think that assistants and spouses get near enough acclaim as what they should.
They don't, yeah, probably.
Because you're kind of the unseen people. Whenever I go to golf tournaments and I see the golfers, but the people who they don't talk to are the women who are their wives, who follow them all the times, and they're the ones who walk all the miles, and you put in the miles also. You travel with Michael around the world, I guess?
Yes, for a lot of years. Until we had children, I went everywhere with them, and so I was very fortunate. I got to see the world. And when Michael travels and he does like lecture tours, you really see the whole country. You know, you see all of Italy, all of Spain, all of Germany, you know, because you're doing a big tour.
Sure.
So, and then of course, when you go and you're with magicians, you get to see it the way tourists don't get to see it. And that's, you know, you're going to people's homes, they're taking you to their favorite restaurants. And so you experience it like a local would. So it's
something
even better.
Something completely different.
It's even better. Yeah, it's very unique in all the world, you know, that. You know, lawyers don't call each other up when they go to other cities and stuff, but magicians do, and so
we do.
It's great, yeah.
There's a commonality and a brotherhood. Do you feel that also,
kind
of everywhere you travel?
Absolutely, yeah, everywhere. Mm-hmm. Everywhere.
What's been one of your obvious questions, the favorite place where you've traveled with Michael?
We both are very fond of Florence, Italy, because we both love art, and we went there many years. I just was very charmed by the little narrow streets and everything, and we also love Spain. The Spanish magicians are kind of like Texans.
Oh, gosh,
they're real friendly, you know, for Europe. They seem to be friendlier, and they eat later in the day, and they're more laid back. And
stay up later at night or early morning.
Yeah,
like
but it's fun. Yeah. Yeah.
You got any stories about Juan? I'm sure Michael does.
Michael does, yeah. Yeah. Let me think.
But I know he stays up, late until the morning, and they don't get up until, like,
yeah, they're just
the
a totally different, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember we were in England. We had to go to Blackpool. Mm-hmm. We were in a little bus with the Morettis and with
Hans
Moretti and his wife.
The box and all that.
The big, strong man. And Juan was in the back seat. Michael and I were in the middle. And we were rushed. We were trying to get to Blackpool in time for Michael's lecture.
Yeah.
And Juan was in the back seat, you know, just kind of like shaving and grooming himself and everything.
Okay.
He's very eccentric, you know, but mm-hmm. that's what comes across in his performances, which makes him interesting to watch, you know. He's just so totally himself. He's There's nobody else like Juan, and he influenced a whole generation of people in Spain because he did television. You know, that whole style has influenced everybody in Spanish magic, I think.
It has, just much like the Asian school of magic over there, then, too. I believe I'm getting the sign already, and that's why we're here, is for the stage contest. Mm-hmm. Hannah, thank you very much
for
being my guest. Hannah
Amara.
You set that down. So, from San Antonio, our next contestant is Bill Winters. So, we do have a little bit of a time over here, and since we had that performer was from San Antonio, I've got another friend of ours from San Antonio, Doug Gorman. Hello, Doug.
Hi, Scott. How you doing?
Fantastic. So glad to have you here with us today, and I just want to, I know you're friends with Richard Turner, and Richard is not with us here at this convention. Has he been doing much traveling or of late, you know? Or?
He's done some traveling during the pandemic, including a month in Russia.
Really?
Yeah.
During the pandemic?
During the pandemic.
Okay. Did you travel with him?
No, I did not go with him this time, but I'll tell you what, he had a very interesting story.
Could you share?
We got to the border of Russia. I don't know all the details. We got to the border and they wouldn't let him in. And he had someone with him who apparently was well placed in the Russian
bureaucracy.
Bureaucracy, yes. Sure. He made a phone call to Putin's right hand man.
Holy moly.
And they opened the gates, let him right in.
Wow, it's nice to have contacts in high places,
yes,
I guess.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Speaking of making phone calls, I want to make sure everybody's phones has been put on silence. I forgot to mention that earlier. I had done that then myself. Let me ask you also about restaurants. I know you've been doing a lot of restaurants. So many things we could talk about in so little time. I want to find out, during the pandemic, was your restaurant open? You've been doing some things recently, or what's been up with that?
No, actually, I haven't done restaurants for a while. I did 10 years at the Spaghetti Warehouse in San Antonio. And
you're doing stage as well as close-up and walk-around, right?
Yeah, mostly parlor. Yeah,
okay.
parlor and close-up.
Now, do people buy tickets for that, or did they just were patrons and they knew that night there was going to be a magician at certain times on stage?
We had a lobby board. I did table hopping every Friday night for 2.5 hours, and then once a month, and then later twice a month, we had dinner shows on Saturday night.
And were those ticketed items or
events? They were things that people made reservations for, came in, and I think they paid $25 and they got their meal and a show.
And that was a separate banquet room area?
Yeah, it was a private dining room. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Very nice. And that was what, 45 minutes, hour?
Yeah, about 45 minute show.
Yeah. Okay.
But I did walk around with that group before dinner.
Right.
Then they ate, and then we did.
Oh, so they got a full evening, really, of magic and food whatever. And spaghetti, I guess.
Yeah.
And so I know also that you collect cups and balls, or not cups and balls, but what am I trying? The ball and vase.
Yeah, I have a few of those.
Just a few.
In fact, I just got a new ball and vase.
How many ball and vases do you have in your collection? Would you
say, it's not that many. Maybe 15 or so.
Okay, but they are high quality, really nicely made.
Jim Reiser stuff. Colin Rose from Five. From England.
He's the one who made the Smashing Stabs. Yeah. I've got one of those.
And also, I can't even think of his name, but he's from Morocco. I saw his advertisement on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Made out of wood that only grows in Morocco.
And Moroccan wood.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Beautiful. Made out of the root of
Why some did you decide to do that? Does it harken back to like the first trick you learned as a child? Or what fascinated you about the
Well, you know, that's probably the only trick I had as a child, because I didn't even get into magic until I was 45 years old.
In the military? When you were in the military?
No, after the military.
Okay.
Yeah, after the military. It's the only trick I had, but I saw a couple of routines that were done without the gimmick, and that intrigued me. It fooled me, and it intrigued me, and that's what sort of got me started, and so I've got a few routines I do with that are a little different than the standard.
They said the things that you just recently had come across one. Was that the one from Morocco that you just got? Okay,
yeah.
I got you.
Yeah.
Is there something that is like the ultimate that you're looking for?
I might already have what that ultimate was, because Jim Reiser made...
I just want your wife to hear you say this.
Yeah, I know.
You don't need another one.
I know. I'm going to sit on this side after... Morrison pillbox that Jim Reiser made for me that I made use of in a in a routine that combined Di Vernon's ball and cone.
Yes.
With the ball vase. So it's.
That's great. Thank you very much, Doug. I appreciate it. I hear them saying we're ready.
Thank you.
So, Doug Gorman from San Antonio. You place that there. Our next guest, is Tim Dietz from Cedar Grove. All right. Just so everybody knows, by the way, we have, I believe, two more contestants. We only had five stage contestants here today, and so we're going to have five speakers, one of which was someone I think you may not, one of whom you may not know, who's not a stage contestant, but someone who has come to us from the University of Texas, the Ransom Center, Dr. Eric Colleary. Hey there, Eric.
Thanks for having me.
And yeah, both of these work, yes. One's recording, the other one is for this. So, for those of you who don't know, who haven't seen nor heard of Dr. Colleary, that yesterday he provided for us a great Zoom lecture of the artifacts that we have from the Ransom Center of the Houdini collection there. And then today at the for the brunch for the Willard or Willard, he's going to be talking more about that. So you've been the curator for a number of years, briefly, and we don't have a lot of time, unfortunately. But if you want to hear more, go back and listen to one of the episodes of the Magic Word podcast. We talked quite length about several things. But briefly, how did Austin come to be the curator, I guess, of this exhibit? And it's a permanent exhibit that's here.
Yeah, it's a permanent collection of material that really came to the University of Texas. Mostly starting in the 1950s, but the magic collections more broadly date back to at least, probably the 1300s in rare books and manuscripts in the collections from a number of different sources. So we have original handwritten manuscripts in Italian and Latin and Greek that date back centuries. One of the largest of the magic collections, of course, was the dramatic library and part of the magic collection of Harry Houdini, which was purchased directly from his widow, Bess, shortly after he died by a real estate developer named Messmore Kendall. Kendall sold the collection to the University of Texas in 1958, and it's been there ever since. It's an incredible collection. It is mostly paper-based. It's photographs, it's posters, lots of letters, and it's not only material documenting the life of Houdini and his career, but it's also an incredible amount of material that he collected about magicians, about magic history. Again, that material dates back to the 1500s that Houdini had collected, largely in English, mostly America, Great Britain, and continental European magic. Pretty extraordinary material.
And that's available for anyone to see for free, but they have to make an appointment to come and view this. Is that right? It's mainly for research.
Absolutely. So we are a research library, a museum, and an archive. So anyone with a photo ID and a sense of curiosity can come and make use of the collections. We just ask that you wash your hands beforehand, and then staff members will sort of help you figure out how to safely handle the materials, and we'll be there to sort of coach you through the way.
And it's not open right now. Is it going to be a while? I understand that the University of Texas has got some social distancing requirements.
We do, but we are actually open at the moment, just on a very limited basis and by appointment. So if you're here, you're here now. It's not that far away. You can set up an appointment if you're still around in Austin next week. You can go onto our website, which is hrc.utexas.edu, set up an appointment and go in. And the staff there will help you search through the inventories to see what you're interested in. If you're interested in seeing posters, we've got that. If you want to see the love letters between Houdini and his wife, Bess, those are there.
Right.
Really not a lot in terms of artifacts or objects. Again, mostly paper-based, but it's there and it's meant to be used.
Someone had asked me recently, and I really don't have the answer to this necessarily, about whether you know, or anyone perhaps who might be in the audience, knows about whether that Houdini's mother was happy with him making the choice of being in theater, which was not a great thing for back then. Do you know?
I don't. There's some lovely material in there.
If anybody knows. I was curious. Someone had said perhaps it was just a Jewish mother would not care for his son to be in theater.
I know of stories where he was considered maybe a bit of a troublemaker in Wisconsin, but Certainly, there's lots of evidence in the archive of his love for his mother.
Yes.
Sadly, very few letters between the two of them. My understanding is those were buried with him.
Oh, is that right? The letters buried with Houdini?
Between him and his mother.
Now, is he interred in New York?
Yes.
Is that right? I didn't know if he was in different places, but he was not, in other words, he wasn't cremated. I mean, his body.
No, yes, yeah. Absolutely. Okay. And how many of you have been to see his grave before? A few of you. Yeah. So, yeah, there's the statue.
You've been there?
I haven't. No, not personally, but I know several people who have.
Yeah. What is perhaps, in your opinion, the most important thing, or what, just we're getting ready here, for the most important thing that people come to see, or one that you is your favorite piece of the Houdini collection, particularly?
Oh, my goodness.
It's like asking, what's your favorite child?
I know. Right now, I'm really interested. There is a fairly thick stack of letters between Houdini and William Robinson that really cover their long friendship and their occasional falling outs. Houdini had quite the temper, and so so you could see when they fell out that it was quick and speedy and very serious. But the letters are extraordinary. It's two colleagues who are teaching each other tricks. They are sharing information through these letters about the performances, the responses from audiences, and their shared love of magic history. And it is an extraordinary thing to be able to sort of see that over a period of time.
Great. Dr. Eric Collieri, thank you very
much.
Thank you
so much. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
And so, I think I erroneously last time had announced that Tim Dietz was from Copper's Cove, and I apologize, he's from Cedar Creek. Our next guest is, our stage contestant, is from Copper's Cove. Please welcome Hagen Fries. Here, you have a seat right there, and we are going to be having one more contestant. Before we do, I just want to also thank you guys very much for coming out this morning and supporting the stage contestants here, as well as for being a friend of the Magic Word and helping to support the Magic Word. And those of you who are friends, I appreciate we just recently had Joe Fox, who had rejoined. So thank you very much for your donation. If anyone is interested in helping to support us, you can see me anytime. But I've got with me good friend Patrick Przecki. So good to see you, Patrick.
Wow, you got the last name right. You got the last name right. That's great. Thanks, Scott.
Well, we've been friends for such a long time, and I really have admired not only the pads you make, which we're going to talk about that in just a second, but also you won several awards. You got a very clever act. You won close-up. And how many places and conventions have you traveled around the world and performed there?
Jeez, right around the United States, you know, performing and contests are a great way to get recognized and to up your game.
Right. Really encourage people to get into contests.
So I was won the IBM and SAM close-up in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, yeah, thanks. Yeah. So Kansas City and Las Vegas. But to do something like this, it really puts you on the map and gets you invited to the Magic Castle and get you around. So, and if anyone's thinking about contests, I thoroughly endorse that.
I highly recommend it, whether it's going to be close-up or stage or whatever. Just get out there and compete, because there are so many reasons why you should join a competition at conventions.
Yep.
So one thing that it launched you into is making pads. Were you interested in that for a long time, or how did you kind of fall into that?
No, nobody in their right mind would do this on purpose. The first thing actually started, I was working a lot of banquets, and I'm 6'3", and I was leaning over, my back hurt, even as a young man. So my friend and I came up with an idea for a portable magic table with a top surface, and that worked pretty well. It's adjustable height. They use it at the 4F convention as well.
Right.
Anyway, I had some material left over. I made a mat for myself, and it got popular, and with suggestions from other magicians, I've morphed into a lot of different ideas and embroideries and personalization, and just kind of morphed into that.
And so when you make these things, how are they made? I mean, this is like some sort of material in the backside. Can you kind of show what
I do all this myself. I get the rubber, the bottom rubber from Connecticut. The middle foam comes from different places around the U.S. The top materials come from different places around the U.S. Mm-hmm. And I glue it all together and press it. And
you custom make these then also.
That's correct.
Certainly. So like the one you made for me and several others where they're actually embroidered in there. So do you embroider the thing and then glue that onto, or how's that kind of?
Yeah, you can't embroider through the rubber. So it right. has to be done on the material before it's applied. And so I have someone do that, a real professional, do right. that for me. How many people here have an embroidered Patrick's mat? Yeah, yeah, look at that. There, we need a
by applause.
More,
they can't hear it right now, so
yeah.
there we go. Yeah,
okay. yeah. yeah. that's cool. Yeah.
yeah, there you go. Well, they're ready for the next one, but real quickly, can you just kind of run through and say, I know they'll only hold those for you as you kind of show those?
No, that's okay. Just for the opening day and home openers, I've made a few mats with some logos of college and pro teams. These are all on sale now for the regular price of a regular mat, so there's no extra charge. I've got a few of each. And in honor of that, for TAOM, I made these special just for you. So,
and also like the cow, the Hereford thing, kind of a thing.
Yeah, there's we got the Cowboys. And hold this.
Yep, I got it.
And the Texas, the Longhorns are on the home opener. I've got just a couple of these, and just in honor of Texas, we've got some with the cowhide that match the chairs. So if you happen to be up late and the chairs are out there and nobody sees you, you could have a chair to match your mat. I don't know. I didn't say that, really.
Hang on to that.
Okay, good. Sure.
All right. Thank you very much. Patrick.
Thanks, Scott. Thank you, everybody. I came from Ohio all the way to see you here.
That's right. He did.
Yeah.
So be sure to check him out over in the dealer's room next door, because this is going to be our final act that's coming up then right now. And so he has come all the way from Dripping Springs. Please welcome James Irwin. Well, I believe that completes our stage competition for today. We'll be having another competition for the close-up tomorrow. I want to remind everybody, if you, as you go home, you can listen to the episodes of the Magic Word Podcast, because I've already posted the first 2 days, a prelude, and then also which we had the unveiling of the Houdini Street sign, and then we went to Esther's Follies on Thursday, and then a lot of things happened yesterday, and so each day there are convention reports over on themagicwordpodcast.com, and you can download that, listen to your car, you can listen to an Alexa. I know, like, Trixie is home working, like, in the kitchen. She says, Alexa, play the Magic Word, and so you can kind of have it in the background or wherever. So wherever you get your podcasts, and if you don't, you should. And so please listen, and I appreciate you guys being here today. Let's have another big round of applause for all of our contestants and the stage crew backstage who have done all this to make it possible. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone. All right, so we are here with Brian Brushwood, who was one of the performers along with Justin Robert Young then last evening, and that was kind of an improvisational thing that kind of came about.
Oh, man.
Tell me a little bit about the genesis of all that.
It turns out that when you have 48 hours to cook up an hour, and you can't use any of your magic because that's already spoken for in a lecture coming up and a show that I'm doing tonight. It's like, well, I do this comedy show with Justin. And on the one hand, it was fun to start off with something so concrete with the fire eating, because I knew that was solid and had no idea whether or not the all set up magician was going to play. Was very pleased with how that went. But then after that, there's this terrifying moment, because the conceit was quite simply, every magician has awesome horror stories of stuff gone awry. And the only way for that not to work is for nobody to volunteer to step up to the mic. And in that regard, I owe you a life debt for rushing and being the first to jump in. Because
once, giving a fake name.
Yes. And once that happened, just all of a sudden everybody was in on it. Of course, you know, Michael Amar just came in like an 800-pound gorilla with this amazing, disastrous story.
Is that really true?
I hope so.
I'm going to say it is.
I mean, if it's not, it will be.
You didn't take your pen.
Oh, thank you. But the important thing was, once it got going, that engine just took care of itself. And
to the point where you had to say, okay, got to rush it along. Okay, that's the last one.
We ended like a Vegas show, like to the minute, exactly on time. I couldn't believe it. It worked out so well.
It did go very well. Now, you're going to be lecturing and performing both then? Still?
Yeah. I'll be doing a little bit in the gala show tonight. What's funny is the fire eating show, years and years and years ago, I did happen to compete with in the contest and win a trophy for here at TAOM. Right. But the stuff I'm going to be doing
tonight. Happy Pants.
Yes, exactly. will be the one time that I entered and didn't win. And it's the one that everyone is requesting.
Yeah. I had so many people say, well, is he going to do Happy Pants?
Yeah, exactly.
Can I have a T-shirt?
And then the lecture tomorrow will be a couple of stronger mentalism bits that I've put together, but mainly how to get a half hour of performance out of a single box of matches. Turns out that you could always, or you used to always be able to rely on there being matches at bars. Yeah. So over 11, 12 years of scam school and stuff, you learn some tricks with matches.
A few things, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I would think with scam school also, you learn a lot of things with everything that's kind of around, whether it's going to be matches, napkins, straws, glasses, and all that kind of stuff, or coins, and not just cards, but, you know.
That's been one of the funnest challenges is just sort of...
Funnest?
Well, I mean...
I never heard of the word funnest.
I'm
the grammar.
Yeah, you know what?
Police,
I'm going to copyright that word. Now you have to pay me every time you use it. One of the most fun aspects is... you know what's funny is the grammarian in me... Never mind. Is trying to live off the land. You know, just walking in anywhere and just sort of scanning. Somebody says, hey, show me some magic. And you're just kind of... Yeah, sure. Dump out this thing. Let's take five of these counters and do a rocks across trick or something, you know? I really enjoy... the perpetual forced creativity that causes.
It does force you to be creative. I remember one time hearing Giovanni Rivera was saying, if I was with my wife and we were on the beach and we just had our swimsuits and then a helicopter came down with these militia and they held my wife at gunpoint saying, I want you to do a half hour of magic or I'm going to kill your wife. He said, I want you to rest assured that they would be laughing and you'd be fine. Well, listen, I know we both got places to go and I want to thank you very much, you know, for what you have been doing and all that you've been contributing. Of course, that you have through your Rogue Nation and everybody. What is it?
I mean, the probably the most popular show right now is that I'm doing is Modern Rogue on YouTube. TAOM was where it all started for me, and it will always be my favorite convention. It'll always have a very special place in my heart, and it's kind of everyone to say thank you that I've been pushing it so hard, but truthfully it's like it's an honor and a privilege. This has been amazing.
Well, you know, I have an extended family, I feel, of course, with so many people I know who are friends, but there are some people I consider much deeper and richer friends and more family. And of course, you know, you're in my inner circle of friends and family because, you know, with Nick working for you and everything, I mean, you're my son. I think of you as a boy. I love hearing that, man.
and what I love that it was at the beginning of my YouTube career that Nick and I made those short little vignettes that you could still find, the Brian Brushman on the road segments out there.
Yeah.
I went back and started visiting some of those the other day.
Well, thank you very much, Brian. I'm going to let you go have
you
some breakfast.
We've
got both some things to do. Good luck. Thanks again for the Magic Word Podcast. That's Brian Brushwood. Scotty out. So this morning's podcast episode you started hearing was recorded during the stage contest, and we jumped right into it fairly quickly, but didn't have a chance to really talk about the show last evening, because there was a late-night magic show that was called, I think, TAOM After Dark. It's a new thing that Saul Ravencraft was hosting, and it's going to be getting darker and darker. Tonight we're going to be having Paul Prater, and tomorrow night will be Vince Wilson, and each of these guys have some bizarre tales to tell, and I know it's going to be fun. Well, last evening was kicked off with Bizarro and Carissa Hendricks as Lucy Darling, and I thought it would be kind of cool to get a little feedback from one of the people who was in the audience. We had about 120 people or so. I mean, it was a big group that stayed up late, quite late last night to watch the show, and I've got past national president of the Society of American Magicians, Mr. Dal Sanders, with me. Hey there, Dal.
Oh, yeah.
Good morning. Well,
it was very late last night. So.
We're not getting sleep, you know, at this TAOM again.
Not at all. I'm sleep when you're dead.
That's right. That's the way I look at it. So it wasn't even over till like about 1 o'clock this morning, you know, in the morning. You know?
That's right. It was clearly like, and then after you got to bed, I don't know if you had the same thing I did, but the show was so good and I laughed so hard.
Yep.
It took me an hour to wind down and relax.
You were sitting behind me, and I kept hearing you just chuckle, not just chuckling, you were chortling and laughing so much out loud behind me.
Well, as always, Cindy gets a little embarrassed when there's comedy going on, especially comedy magic, because
it's good comedy magic.
I cannot control it. It's just, I laugh. It was laugh out loud funny.
Yeah, it was laugh out loud funny. And so it was, again, when I say hosted by Saul Ravencraft, which is the alter ego for Chris Walden, but it had Bizarro, who was formerly from Dallas, now in Las Vegas, been there for a long 15 years or so, and then of course I mentioned Carissa Hendricks as her alter ego, who is Lucy Darling. So talk a little bit about that dynamic.
Well, first of all, as someone who works with partners, I really, really love the fact that they were doing a partner act. Okay. And I've known Jimmy since he was in high school. Bizarro, since he was in high school. And he's also a very good artist. I don't know if you knew that or not, but he drew these characters back when he was in high school. He drew his whole Bizarro character and all the characters that he works with, and would show me his artist pad of yeah, and I want to do a show, and I want to have this character and that character.
And all this stuff. Yeah,
yes, the whole bit. Yeah. And so this is something that just didn't come about. This is something that he's been planning for at least 20 years.
Yeah.
And to see it actually in the flesh, on the stage, is so exciting for me. I love the fact that he got to Vegas. I like the fact that I helped him get to Vegas a little bit.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that he is taken to it, and Vegas is taken to him. Now, I first met Carissa after one of the conventions. I don't even remember which one. And a lot of times if I'm in Vegas and I don't call Jimmy, he gets upset with me. So I called him and said, listen, I'm going to the afternoon show. I think we were going to see Murray or something. He said, oh, I am too. And he said, I've got someone I want you to meet. And it was Carissa. And so the first time I met Carissa, I'm thinking like, well, this person is very interesting. She's very funny.
Yeah.
And she and Bizarro, Jimmy, have this great dynamic, you know, just riffing off each other.
Yeah.
And to see that finally come into being after, I mean, this has been at least 7 or 8, maybe 10 years since I first met her. It was just amazing to see the way they work together. I love it. These two need to go on tour together. They need to start performing together all the time. Maybe add a couple more acts, but they could certainly carry the show themselves.
It's a certain account, as I understand it. This was the first time that they'd actually worked together, and it was something in which Bizarro was genuinely pleased because he could see that Chris or Lucy Darling was actually laughing for real. It's like, oh, that's funny. And he said, you like that? I mean, they really did kind of play off each other. I mean, it was really George Burns and Gracie Allen of today, it seems like. But they were, yeah, really, really good.
Absolutely. And I do know they were a little bit nervous going into it because they didn't know how everybody else was going to react to it. But they got the first standing ovation of this TAOM, so it was incredible.
That
says a lot.
And that's not just because people were getting up to leave because it was 1 in the morning. They were standing up generally because, I mean, just it was just raucous. It was, and it kept everybody up. There wasn't anybody snoring in the audience for sure.
Yeah. No, not even the old people were snoring. And speaking as one of the old people, not even the old people.
Yep, as I said, I was right in front of you, and I heard you the whole time, and you kept me awake, but no, it was good because, first of all, Bizarro had come out, and he had done part of his act that I'd seen from before, and then Carissa was apparently in the audience, and she was kind of heckling him, and he said, wait a minute, why don't you come up here then and do something? And then that kind of led to...
Carissa wasn't in the audience. Lucy Darling was in the audience.
I'm sorry, yes, correct.
So, and he, like, yelled backstage, hey, Carissa, Lucy Darling is here. You mind if she does a couple of things?
And so, like he was talking off the wing, like, Carissa, hey, you know, Lucy's here. And then Lucy was saying, no, you don't need that lady.
She's terrible. So it was so good, so well written.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a lot of room for improv, too. But you could also tell that it was well written and well thought out and well planned.
Yeah.
So loved it.
It wasn't all improv, that's for sure. Although the improv was phenomenal. It was scripted as to who was going to do what and when and how they interact with each other for some of the tricks. And so they did have things they not only would pass off to each other, but they integrated together.
You know, absolutely.
So,
absolutely. The only thing that I saw that I thought was going to happen that didn't is, I don't know if you noticed the curtains on the side.
Yeah.
There was a pole And when Carissa was coming out of the stage left, there was a pole that was showing, and she kept grabbing the pole, laughing at Jimmy. And I said, okay, she's going to do some sort of pole swing or pole dance or something. She never did that, but I thought, okay, that would have been perfect if she had done that.
Well, because she was just laughing, and she kind of poked her head out and would occasionally give him these glances or laughter or whatever and encouragement.
Yes. And, of course, you know, we all give those, you know, glances to Bizarro and have over these years. I mean, you know, he is the king of the bad pun.
Yeah.
And but
he had so many funny lines.
He sure did. And all I just totally loved every minute of that act of the two working together. And when they worked separately, it was just the best show I've seen.
For convention organizers who are considering looking for an act, that is
a duo act.
Yeah, that is hard to beat. Each of whom not only can provide with this show together, also great independent lectures. Bizarro's got one, and Carissa Hendricks as Lucy Darling has one. She's giving here as well.
So. Oh, I didn't know Lucy was
She did when she was the TOM in Houston a few years ago.
Right, right.
So I don't know if she is here or just performing only.
I don't know either. I keep looking at the schedule and trying to figure out what's
next. Well, it has changed a little bit, and that's what I was about to say as we wrap up over here, because right now it's about time. There was supposed to have been for Nick DeFatman, since he couldn't make it, that Brian Brushwood has actually stepped up and doubling his efforts. He was going to be performing and doing some other stuff, but he ended up doing a show last night and had brought in his friend Justin Robert Young, and we've discussed this already on the show. He also then is filling in as the lecturer, although the schedule, as printed, says Nick DeFatman, but obviously that's being filled in by Brian Brushwood. So I'm anxious to go and see and hear him.
Absolutely. Brian's always good, too.
So. Thanks very much, Dal Sanders. I appreciate you being here on The Magic Word. So until next time, that was Dal Sanders, Scotty out. So thank you guys very much. We are in the close-up room over here. We have four different close-up performers who are going to be with us today, and I'll kind of give you a preview then as well, if I can have the sheet back over there just a minute, Jay. But we first of all had Mike Amar. Next, we're going to be having Sterling Dietz, followed then by Cody Fisher, and then David Elliott, who are going to be the ones in this room. You guys, just as a reminder of who the ones who were the close-up performers over here. Any comments, by the way? Is there someone that would like to share the mic here for just a moment to kind of give a thought on something that has been a highlight so far for the convention? Somebody that, Fred, come on, you've enjoyed something? Come on over here a second. All right. Fred, so tell me about something that you've seen just last night's show, the lecture, or something that impressed you then so far?
Well, I'm sure it's no surprise to anybody, but Brushwood killed.
He did.
Every time he's been on the stage for his entire life, but including here. Including here.
Yes. You lived in Austin for a long time, and you probably remember Brian from when he was a little kid.
I remember Brian from when he was in college.
Okay, well, young enough.
That's a little kid to me.
That's right. And do you move actually from here out to your South Carolina?
North Carolina.
North Carolina. Well, okay, one of those Carolinas. That's right.
Right.
We just have Texas. We had East Texas, North, South, and Texas, you know, different parts of our country, too. Our state, we call it. So the idea is, so you liked him. Did you like his lecture? Did you learn some things from the lecture today? Did you follow him on Scam School and Rogue Nation?
Oh, everything. Okay. But he didn't hold anything back in his lecture.
No,
he gave away everything.
Well, really, I had to pay for it.
Well, you shouldn't have. Oh.
Okay, wow. Okay, you got a good deal.
I got a good deal.
Okay.
No, he gave away his secrets.
Okay, yes, he did. Then last evening's show was phenomenal. I thought completely different with Justin Robert Young, who was on there with him.
Oh, especially with no notice. I mean, he was called in at the last minute, and it was all improv. It was great. Anybody else there?
Yeah. Enjoy the show last night? Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Fred.
Yep.
Appreciate that.
Not going to
put you over here too much longer. Anybody else have another comment on someone else you like or something show or something? That nobody cared about anything else. Everything else is fine. Because I think we also have had some pretty cool things as far as the giveaways with the posters that we'd had. And then we had Dr. Eric Herleary, who had spoken with us this morning, like at the Willard Brunch, and then yesterday at the Houdini Collector, about Houdini, the Collector's thing then yesterday. It was kind of cool. Bob, you want to mention anything? Let me ask you
come over. The Willard breakfast was great.
Explain what that is for some people. Stand up here just a second, so that way people can see. Then okay. Who are watching this virtually as well, kind of put up. You're talking to some people there.
Yeah, the Willard organization, part of the TOM, is named after Willard the Wizard, mm-hmm. and of which Michael Amar is related. Mm-hmm.
And you want to explain how?
Anybody
and why?
Else related? Are there any other relatives in here? well, Willard the Wizard. Daughter who performed with him for many years was Frances. And so she had two daughters, and Hannah is the one that married Michael Amar.
Right. And she is with us actually at this convention.
Yes.
I don't know if you guys have had an opportunity to see her, but she is here then too.
And we should see Frances tomorrow night.
We should. Yep. Yes. Yeah, that's right. She's going to be performing. Is it tomorrow night or tonight?
Is it tonight?
I believe it's tonight.
Okay. Well,
and what she's going to be doing is the seance, the spirit cabinet that
She's going to do the gypsy rope.
I'm sorry. She's going to do the gypsy rope. That's what I was going to say, that she and Glenn, her husband, Falkenstein, had done many years ago. The last time she's probably going to be performing this. So we'll be seeing the last performance of a Willard doing something here
right,
tonight then too.
Right.
Okay. Bob Emery, thanks very much. I see our next guest actually is over here. So thanks very much. All right, so we have then our performer who is coming up next. So he is someone actually who started in Washington State. He had just a few years ago, actually, I have seen this young man actually perform at some other conventions when he was much younger, although he's still very young, and had won, I believe it was the Teen World Championship of Magic. Now has his own theater down in Cabo San Lucas in Mexico. Please welcome Sterling Dietz.